fuse with the Browns. But you know they'd go for the gusto if they could. There are actually very few issues with the Cavs other than, hey, you know, they're not very tough. But you can't accuse them of not going for the gusto. I mean, this is why they don't have a first-round pick until 2030, Daryl. They went on and got Donovan Mitchell. They went and got the guy that was available to them, who they didn't think they'd have a chance at, and they got him, and here we are. And it's a pretty... I know people are disappointed. It's still a damn good basketball team. You got these two teams that, beyond a shadow of a doubt, and the one team you got a lot of problems with, I get it, but you can always say, as you're steering wheel going, yeah, you know, even if it costs us a lot over the course of time, they will make that move. The other one won't. And when you have two teams in town that are willing to do it, and the other one where it's like, hey, would it cost you that much more? And then I think it is frustrating when, yeah, there is a guy like me who's sitting there going, well, you know, you don't know how much they got. And we say, but it's a different. That is frustrating. But when you have Zach coming out there and saying, you know, this was not the year that they should have pulled back, and they keep pulling back. They pulled back after the pandemic. They pulled back. Now it became, he didn't say it, but I'll say it, maybe a convenient excuse to pull back with the television deal. But maybe it's just where there is a fear of investing. And we say, well, they can't come out from under it. That's tough. There's another thing that is far worse for this year, by the way. And this is what Zach Meisel had said earlier on in the interview, that this was fairly disturbing.
How many times have we heard Stephen Vogt in the last few weeks say, oh, well, like, we just didn't look like ourselves tonight? Well, no, if you say that five times in a span of 2 weeks, then that's probably who you are. That was set up to be the perfect opportunity to get angry, show some passion, fire up the troops.
So you're saying Vogt should have done more?
If there was ever a time to get mad and make a scene and, I don't know, charge a little bit of energy into the dugout. I mean, they had more errors than hits. You need some energy. You need something to change. And they just, I don't know.
Well, Owen, champions pose. I mean, I didn't want to I don't want them to fight out there. You're going to suspend guys, but damn it. I mean, Stephen Vogt could have done more. Stephen Vogt could have got tossed. Champions pose. I know they can't see you, but do it.
I know that Zach probably knows more baseball than me.
But he's agreeing with you.
Well, no, and that's what I'm saying. It shouldn't take Zach Meisel to agree with me for anyone to look at this team and go, what the hell are you doing? If you listen to sports talk radio, you obviously have some part of you that is competitive and has a passion and a fire in you, and it doesn't feel like the team gives you that same thing back. And for a guy like myself, I can't speak for anyone else, but I spend hundreds of dollars a year going to these games. We're verging on thousands of dollars a year, taking my family, buying the passes for myself and my wife. All I want for you, Steve, all I want for you, Cleveland Guardians, is to go out there and show me that you care a little bit. And they haven't shown that they care at all over the last month, especially.
You know, you can say whatever you want to about Owen, because I don't want to be a guy shooting my mouth off saying that they should just go out and fight all the time. But I'm not questioning you on it, because I'll tell you this. I would say that
I will fight you.
Well,
Ken.
I think that there's probably people who do remotes over there that Owen goes to more baseball games than when it comes to the city. So when it comes to radio or television, I would say that Owen definitely goes to more games than all of them combined. That includes me. That includes everybody
and
here.
And that's not Owen, a guy that's on the radio. No, that's going to cover the game.
Owen goes
to stand in left field and drink my drinks and watch the baseball game.
That's what I like about him. He drinks his drinks there.
They got an 8%
one. Yeah, it starts at the top, Ken.
Maybe Steven should have done more. What do you mean it starts at the top?
They don't have passionate ownership. They don't. They've had
steady ownership.
They have steady ownership.
Passionate ownership can be scary, man. I tell you, you can do some stupid things with a passionate owner.
We've got a couple passionate owners.
You need a passionate manager.
Passionate owner gets you $230 million guaranteed.
Yeah, a passionate owner can do some things that are not very smart in the long term.
But what I mean is they don't go for it ever. They never go for it. They never go for it.
I mean, they went for it as best they could in 2016.
They're not passionate. They're not passionate about trying to win a World Series. They're passionate about being like competitive and getting people to buy the suites and the new terrace club in left field and the new club behind home plate. That's what they're passionate about.
Well,
they're not passionate about winning at all.
You've known that for a long time. That doesn't still give Stephen Vogt an excuse to just stand there and say a couple of things and that be it. I mean, Jose Ramirez getting hit. And again, I'm hearing it right there from Zach. get your ass out there and get thrown out of the baseball game over it if you want to. It only lasts until the next night. It would only last until tonight against St. Louis. But again, from what we saw yesterday, I mean, these are paid professionals. So that's Little League stuff. That's what 10U travel ball teams don't even do that.
The bad freaking news
out,
bears.
Freaking out, trying to make every single play, whipping the ball down to home plate when you already have a guy who's sliding into home. Bo Naylor not even paying attention. I mean, that's Little League stuff. You send kids to run foul poles for that at 10U. These are professionals here. And when I say, like, hey, you know, they're doing the best they can. Are they doing the best they can in yesterday's game? No. 6-0, hot-ass day. Got a bunch of people who are excited to be there, except for the guys on the field.
You know who Steven Vogt is? Coach Buttermaker.
If he was drunk, I think he'd be thrown out of the baseball game yesterday.
Coaching the Bad News Bears.
Lenny and Amherst, you're first up on the Fan.
I just want to agree with Owen. I got to tell you something. The one thing in all the years I coached baseball, I understood when we lost, but I never understood when we beat ourselves. When I saw that game yesterday and Naylor was looking down at the ground, not paying attention, that settled my case against him. And worse comes to worse, I got an email saying next year's tickets, 4 seats behind home plate, are over $19,000. All I gotta say.
What was it I was talking to yesterday? Damn it, somebody say that they just got an email about renewing their season tickets. It was after the 6-0 loss.
I know a few people that got their emails at 3:00 yesterday.
Bad time. Gotta send that on an off day, guys.
I'm checking my email right now to see if, because I bought tickets myself. So
you gotta send that on an off day. 3:00 during a day game, if things could go one way or the other. I mean, if they were up 6-0, send away. Go right on ahead.
I bought tickets for like 5 games this year. Well, I didn't get that email.
Oh, and you're right. And I think the fans will reciprocate there if you're not going to show passion. Because it's honestly one of the worst things you can call a team. You know, when you say that the Cavs are soft, that's a pretty bad thing. To say that they lack fight at all, I mean, that's a bad thing. Calling guys soft, calling guys weak, saying that they don't have fight. I mean, that's a high crime to commit. And that is a very strong thing to say to somebody. And if Zach's saying it, then I know a lot of people around them are thinking it. And if Steven Vogt's not going to go out there and pick up for his guys, then yeah, they'll probably lay down like dogs if worse comes to worse. Now, this is a rough stretch. I understand that. They've been the type of team that once you start talking real trash about them, they go out and they win 6 games in a row, but nothing they've done over the last month has really been consistent. Their starting rotation was better during the month of June. Yesterday, I don't even put that much on Bobby. I mean, good God, you threw like 30-something pitches in the third inning because Kyle Manzardo's out there with no arms. So I'm not trying to put a ton on Tanner Bibee, but damn it, Zach is right. Owen, you're right. Like, yeah, should have been out there. Should have been bitching. Should have got enough to get thrown out of the game. Hell, at least you would have been in air conditioning. They have the air conditioning on, don't they? Yeah, you could have went out there, got thrown out of the game. It's not going to inspire them to turn it around for the entire year. I know that. And I'm trying to put the best face forward and saying, hey, man, if I get a starting rotation out of this, they are what they are. But, man, it sounds to me like I've been a fool and I've been making excuses here over the last month and a half. Because it's been at times, it hasn't been good. And I could say, well, the stupid platoon stuff you're doing, you got guys who do not have futures out there. We're arguing. I mean, I got Jonathan and I taking shots at each other over Nolan Jones' exit velocity, for crying out loud. How much of a worthless conversation is that in the grand scheme of things? Jonathan, who's about to have another kid. I might be at Jonathan's daughter's wedding someday, and we're going to sit here and bitch about exit velos over Nolan Jones because they're out of options, so they have to force them down our throats all the time. I have to sit there and watch Will Wilson, who basically looks like a guy who's an extra in a minor league baseball movie, who looks like the second baseman in Bull Durham. I got to have that.
I'll tell you, we've got a stretch here before the All-Star break where we play the Cardinals. Well, play the Cardinals, who are 44-38. You got first place Cubs. You got first place Tigers, and then you finally get. Oh, then you got the Astros, first place Astros. Then you finally get the White Sox before the break. I didn't think that they were out of it yet, but first half. You keep playing like this.
Yes, because you said it. The first half schedule was sixth.
Yes.
Sixth toughest in Major League Baseball. Yeah. By the time you get to the 28th toughest schedule in Major League Baseball, you might not be worth it anymore. Because those teams are lined up to bury you. If you're going to go out there and do what you did yesterday, I mean, my God, you should be playing desperate baseball.
By the time you get to the All-Star break, the conversation about, well, they're only a game and a half out of the last wild card spot, even though they are exactly one game over 500, because that's what everyone's clinging to, is, well, they're still in wild card contention. No, they're not. I don't care what the standings.
That's 2 weeks from now, guys.
My eyeballs are telling me this team isn't contending with anybody.
Wild card contending is for those of us who aren't, and I throw us in there, who aren't paying that close of attention right now, because the only teams that are really out of wild card contention right now are the A's and White Sox.
Right.
That's it, because there's three wild card spots. Baltimore, seven games back of the wild card. I guess you can throw the Orioles in there if you really want to. So that leaves Cleveland, Los Angeles, Texas, Boston, Minnesota. You got six teams there.
The most damning argument
that
Zach made, and it was right on the nose, was you were three wins from the World Series last October, and this is where you're at right now.
Two draft picks yesterday for your Cleveland Cavaliers. Tyrese Proctor, Duke, number 49 overall. Saliu Niang from Senegal.
Who?
Number 58 overall. Shut up. Do you have the guy announcing it before we bring in Mike DeCourcy? Yeah, please get the guy announcing it. Because, hey, man, I've heard of Tyrese Proctor. I've watched Tyrese Proctor. Hey, I'm not Jonathan Givony. I'm not Mike DeCourcy. I'm not John Fanna. I've not seen a ton, but I knew who Tyrese Proctor is. Oh, let's get to Mike DeCourcy.
With the 58th pick in the 2025 NBA draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select Saliu Niang.
All right, I got it right. Audio courtesy ESPN in this interview. Courtesy of Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. He's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Mike, thanks for joining us this morning, friend.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
We're doing okay. You know, the Cavaliers had two draft picks in the second round last night. First off, what did you think of the two-night draft? Did you like it better than the one night, or what did you think?
I think turning the... I'll be very curious to see the ratings for the second night, because the second round of the NBA draft is not an occasion. It's a perfunctory exercise that you must go through. And I don't think that it's worthy of its own night. And I think it was pretty clear from the telecast, they weren't all that interested in it either. They talked about almost everything but the players selected.
I was kind of let down by both nights, to be honest with you, but that's a different story for a different day. I agree with you wholeheartedly, though, I'll tell you that. So, hey, man, do you know anything about Saliu Niang before we get to Tyrese Proctor? Because I know you cover a lot of it's college basketball that you write about. But do you know anything about this young man, or can I move on to Proctor?
Yeah, I've watched a little bit of his tape. It's really hard to get a feel often for international prospects, even by watching their tape. Unless something stands out. I mean, when I saw Giannis on his tape, I didn't know much about him coming in. And there was a lot of criticism of that pick at that point. And I watched his tape, and my eyes were flying out of my head. It was unbelievable. And there's nothing extraordinary about his tape. He looks like a good, solid, hardworking player who has, you know, a nose for the basketball and good hands. But there's not much that I know about it beyond that.
Cavaliers GM Mike Gansey said that, you know, Proctor is a player that might be able to not just make their roster, but help them this year. So just on what you have watched of him at Duke, how close do you think Proctor is to, you know, being able to tangibly contribute?
Well, I think that he has a lot of excellent qualities for an NBA wing. His size, outstanding. He's a good enough ball handler that there was a time when it was pondered whether he might be a point guard. So if he develops in that direction, he might be able to help the Cavs with some minutes at that position. But I think that the key for him to become, especially in this with this roster and how successful they were a year ago and how loaded up they are for 2025, 2026 with all the absences now that we'll have in the East, with Tyrese Halliburton not playing. He may appear in a game, but he's not going to play the season. And the same for Jason Tatum. So many injury absences. Dame in Milwaukee, I'm not sure, is quite as impactful as the other two, but it still makes a difference. All those guys likely to have very little impact on next year. So next year's Cavs are in a good position to do even better than they did this year. For Proctor to impact that, he's got to build some confidence. That's the biggest thing for him. I mean, there's little stuff with all the rest of it, but he's got to believe. He was a player who, in a lot of big moments, kind of was like, okay, I'll just stand over here. You guys do all the big stuff. That was his problem as a player. Down the stretch of last season when – one made three-pointer could have made all the difference, or maybe three made baskets instead of only two against Houston. I know Houston's defense was terrific, but his shot left him when the games got big. And that can't happen at the NBA level. And he honestly should be a better three-point shooter than he has been. Over the course of his career, he shot 36%. He was better last season. He shot 40%, and that's what you need, but it's got to be there in the biggest games. Last three games for Duke last year, Sweet 16, Elite Eight, Final Four, he was 3 of 13 from deep. And I know players get streaky and stuff. Before that, he was 13 of 14 against Mount St. Mary's and Baylor. But when the games get big, you can't get smaller. And that had tended to be his path through the course of his career.
Mike DeCourcy joining us from the Sporting News, because I want to go, well, he's just a pup. He is 21 years old. I don't know, you know, how we look at it in terms of youth when it comes to the NBA, but could this be maybe the perfect spot for him? Because it's like, hey, man, you got this big, deep team that's supposed to make an NBA Finals run, and you are not supposed to be a part of that as of right now. But you played for the premier program in college basketball. There's a ton of pressure that goes on there. You're like, hey, we'll take the pressure off you. We'll coach you up, get that shot back, and then maybe down the line we can work with you here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I'm talking about. He has the skill set. It's there. He's a very capable passer. There's the group of Jason Kidds and Magic Johnsons out there, and then there's everybody else. And he's in that next group, the guys who can see a play as it happens and make the pass. He's not the guy who sees a pass that's two passes ahead. Like the best point guards are, the very best point guards are. But he can play the position and make the pass you need him to make. He's had a lot of assists in his career, a lot of 4 and 5 assist games in his career. He's got all of that. And as I said, he shot 40% from three this year. He showed some range on some of those because obviously it's a couple feet back to shoot it at the NBA level. And I think he showed that that's not going to be a big jump for him. It's just that confidence thing. It's always been a problem for him. In the biggest games that Duke has played over the last 2 years, both of which either involved them getting to the Final Four or winning a national championship, in those 2 years, he just wasn't there in the biggest moments. You go back to last season as well, and he's 1-9 at the Sweet 16 Elite Eight level, and they don't make the Final Four. And he's 3-17 from the field. In the Elite Eight Sweet 16 game. So this is who he has been. I am not singling out two games and saying this is a problem. This is an issue that he has got to conquer. You have to believe that you can play if you're playing with those guys. If you're playing with Mitchell, you got to believe, man. Darius Garland, if you don't believe, why would they?
Is that just a youth thing, or is this something that he can kind of grow into here with the Cavaliers?
Well, I don't think it's a youth thing because he's playing against other youths.
Yeah.
It's what he has been as a player. But as is the case when Miles Turner got to Indiana, I think he'd made 25 threes in his freshman year, something like that, and this year he made like 80. At the NBA distance. So you can grow into certain skills or abilities, but you have to work at it and you have to gain confidence, maybe a sports psychologist, whatever it might be, that gets you to that level that when the games get big, you don't get smaller. And that's why the Pacers got to where they were this year, because Nembhard had big games late because Nesmith had big games as they got deeper into the playoffs. And it's why, you know, Jalen Williams went from late first round pick, mid first round pick, unheralded coming out of Santa Clara, and is the second or third option on the NBA champion. It's because you have that confidence that, yeah, I can do this. And so I certainly believe that Tyrese can get there, but it's something that they know, they'll know at Cleveland that he's got to work on. Given where they pick, I don't think they could have selected a better prospect than Tyrese Proctor. I think he's got a lot going for him.
Makes me feel good about that. Mike DeCourcy joining us on the show. I got more with college basketball. I just want to get your opinion real quick. Do you think that some of the stuff about the Cavs making trades is kind of overblown? With the second apron and everything, is their best interest to just stand pat and see if they could run him back yet again?
Well, I mean, I think as close as they came, I'm not sure that I would be in a hurry to abandon what got me there. I wouldn't, especially when the competition around you has thinned a bit. I mean, I think Orlando's going to be better, but I don't know if they can make that much of a jump. They can probably be a factor in the playoffs, but I still think that there are holes in their rotation that will prevent them from really seriously challenging for a finals appearance. New York is still a factor, but I mean, they made the absolute wrong move in getting rid of Thibodeau. He had a bad 2 weeks in the Indiana series,
mm-hmm.
but they got there, and it was a very Knicks-ish reaction to fire him because he had a bad couple of weeks. A bad couple of weeks, maybe it was just a bad matchup. But you don't abandon everything that has gotten you that far because somebody didn't do well. Look, he didn't have a great couple of weeks. He tried some things. Sometimes they worked. Mostly they didn't. Indiana was better. The Cleveland didn't foolishly fire their coach because Indiana was better on those couple of weeks. No, they Kenny Atkinson did a fantastic job. Move forward. And then you look around and you're like, geez, man, there's not a lot left in this side of the NBA right now because of Jason's injury, because of Hallie's injury. We can do this. And I think that's the approach that the Cavs absolutely should take. If there are there's a little tinkering that they can get a little better, go for it. But I don't think they need any sort of significant overhaul because they lost the playoff series.
Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News with us. LeBron is in his twilight. You know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a great player. Maybe he takes the torch, but we're coming from a league of icons and kind of looking for the next face of the NBA. Could Cooper Flagg be that guy?
Yeah, you know, I think he can be a great, great player. And I do think he's the best prospect America has turned out in a while. But his game is so different that I don't know yet whether or not it develops into that sort of what we usually embrace as an icon. Can he score 24, 25 points a game? I guess he can, if that's what they want. I mean, I don't think they're going to want that rookie year or anything approaching it because they've got a lot of established players, Kyrie, Anthony Davis, et cetera. He can help them get really good in not very much time. I think he can be outstanding because he does so many things well. But I don't know that there's been many guys like him that became that kind of iconic player. I'm not sure that that's the case. So I think he can be a star for sure, superstar, probably icon. That's a long way from what he does to people embracing it.
What's your thoughts on Ace Bailey?
Ace is, by the way, I wrote about him earlier this week for a piece I did at sportingnews.com. And here's the interesting thing about Ace is that everything that's happening now is not Ace. That's not who he is. That's not who he has been. It is how he is being handled. And I don't know they're right or wrong or indifferent. That's up to them. It's his career. He's going along with this. But I talked to Steve Peichel, who was his coach in college, and he told me that Ace is among the best kids he's ever coached. He said that he gave a great analogy, a story to explain it. He said that they have 26 student managers in Rutgers program, which is a lot, obviously. And yeah. he said some guys come in on just on Tuesdays and some just on Thursdays. And he said, I know most of them, but I don't think I know all of them. But Ace knows everyone. Ace knew every manager on the team, like the kind of guys that you don't guys and ladies that you don't necessarily have to pay attention to. If you're a college basketball player, you can just say, hey, go get me that towel and never know their name. But that wasn't him. He's just a great young man. This drama is sometimes the way careers start. It didn't impact our perception of Eli Manning. It didn't impact our perception of John Elway. It shouldn't impact our perception of Ace Bailey as an athlete or a person. However, it could be the wrong approach to having a proper start to his NBA career. And certainly, if not showing up in Philly for the workout, not attending, declining or whatever, however the mechanism of that worked, yeah, it doesn't make any sense, because the higher you are in the draft, the more money you get under the rookie scale. So if you don't want to go to Philly, then you go to the workout, you do it for them, and then you say, look, I don't think I want to be here. You know what I have. Somebody out there will want me at three. Make a trade, and you can get me. You can get your preferred player and something else. Instead, he just doesn't show, and then he falls.
Follow him on Twitter, at TSN Mike. One of the best basketball guests you're going to find. I know I had you on the Infinity Sports Network a whole bunch. Mike, take care of yourself. Hopefully, we'll talk to you again very shortly.
Thanks, Ken. I appreciate it.
So much can happen around the globe that we never hear of.
I really share in our fans' disappointment, frustration. Honestly, I'm embarrassed.
They've been through some tough battles, right? They know what the playoffs looks like. This team's been battle-tested in the playoffs.
He's a piece of crap. The kid, he sucks. He's sucked his whole career.
I got rumors about him. I couldn't please his wife, so now he's divorced.
Put a damn winning team on the field.
Now, the Ken Carman Show with Anthony Lima give their thoughts on what you might have missed about last night.
So, guys, will you indulge me today? We already had one producer on this show this morning get a little bit heated over the lack of fight from the Cleveland Guardians yesterday. Can I air out some of my grievances to start off this segment, if you'll indulge me?
Sorry, my mic was off. Yeah, let's indulge.
I had an indulgence. I was at the game yesterday. I wasn't with Owen. We were sitting in different sections. I was actually in the club seats. I got a lucky ticket, but
wow.
But here's the thing.
Hold on. Congratulations on all your success.
Thank you.
Hey, go right on ahead.
Despite the great amenities there, I had to sit in 90-degree, humid as hell weather. I watched a team yesterday hit as many pop-ups and flyouts yesterday than I could possibly have imagined. I counted 16 of the 27 outs yesterday were pop-ups, and it frustrated me to hell because the Cleveland Guardians had one of the worst offensive performances they've had all season, 6-0 against the Toronto Blue Jays. Now, this was a big part of the frustrations for yesterday, as well as what we've been talking about all morning, which is that the Guardians and Blue Jays exchange hit by pitches between Vlad Guerrero and then Jose Ramirez on both ends. However, both managers, Vogt and Blue Jays manager John Schneider, kind of playing down the situation in their post-game press conferences.
You have to pitch guys like that inside. And every now and then one's going to get away. We're clearly not trying to hit anybody. We don't do that. But he gets hit twice in a series. You know one's coming.
I mean, I know they're not trying to throw at Vlad. You know, we're not trying to throw at Hosey. You know, just kind of one of those things where you try to make a pitch. And I thought everyone handled it fine.
That'd be a Sportsnet Canada.
I think you were throwing at one guy. I think you were throwing at Jose after Vlad got hit twice. I don't think they were trying to hit Vlad on purpose. But I think once he got hit a second time in 2 days, then obviously messages were going to be sent. I want to go back to something, though.
Sure.
You said 16 pop-ups yesterday.
Pop-ups or flyout combinations.
Okay, 16 of them. Would it have been easier for you if it was 73 and partly cloudy? Because you said it was like 95 degrees. I'm like, I don't care what the weather is. That sucks no matter what.
Even then, no, because I'm one of the weirdos that actually prefers the overcast days in like September.
That's okay.
Yeah, if it was that, it would have been decent. But just being outside for that long and having to deal with everything was just not the most pleasant experience. But great experience overall at Progressive Field.
Except, you know, they lost 6-0 and they had more errors than they had hits.
It was insane.
Can you say it's still a great experience if they play that lousy?
I think you can have a good experience even if your team loses the ballpark.
Daryl?
I'm still stuck on he prefers it overcast in September.
I don't mind
that. Well, any time of the year, really. Like I like
you like it cloudy.
I do. I like a gray overcast sky.
I don't mind it. There was like one time earlier this spring where I didn't like it because it just kept raining. But I don't mind.
Well, you asked us to have 55 and drizzle if we
were going to wake the World Series. We're clearly not going to do that. So I hope it's going to be nice and sunny all summer, even though this has been the worst summer weather-wise ever. Moving on, Mitch.
Going from baseball to basketball yesterday, the Cleveland Cavaliers adding a pair of draft picks. And now people were talking, you know, with these two second-round additions for the team, what is that going to mean for potential Cavs' upcoming free agents like Sam Merrill or Ty Jerome? We had Mike Ganzi, the assistant, GM of the Cavaliers yesterday.
He's the regular GM. He's not the assistant.
That right, assistant? Now,
they removed that.
Full-fledged.
He's full-fledged assistant GM for the Cavs yesterday, addressing the matter.
I don't think it changes it much at all. You know, I think with this pick, we're just going to take the best talent there and then the guy we like the most. And, you know, Tyrese was that guy and can't have enough ball handlers. And he's 21. He's still got a lot of upside. We're excited for him to, you know, work with Kenny and his group and get him in here and just kind of see what happens.
Is it a case where one of these two guys are going to be back next year? I don't know if both these guys are going to be back next year, even if the picks didn't come in.
Well, next year, I think you would still have... I still think you would have Proctor. I don't know, but he's from Senegal, but the guy who's going to play in Europe ain't going to be
right
here.
I'm talking about our free agents coming up.
Oh, you were talking about the rookies. Ty, I don't know, man. I don't know what they can play with. I know that Ty was so terrible in the Indiana series. I mean, if you have to make a choice, which one are you choosing? You choose Ty, wouldn't you? Daryl, when you choose Ty?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's going to be expensive, though. It's because it's not just the salary. You got to factor in your tax penalty.
Well, then I guess I'm not getting anybody.
So he may cost you $70 million next season without paying
Ty
him.
Ty Jerome?
Without paying him $70 million. Yeah.
Glad I don't own him. Because just money to me. I don't care about his money, so it doesn't matter.
But Dan's getting $600 million for 15% of the Cavs anyway. He can afford
That's why he has to sell 15% of the franchise to pay Ty Jerome, of all people. Sucks. Truth, though.
Sticking with the NBA draft yesterday, this is an interesting segment from Pardon the Interruption yesterday on ESPN. They were talking about how Cooper Flagg, of course, going number one to the Mavericks, joining a roster that, according to Nico Harrison, is being built to win now, and this was an interesting bit between the guys yesterday.
You got Kyrie Irving, okay, who we've seen help get a team to the finals. You got Anthony Davis, Klay Thompson, guys going to the Hall of Fame. Flagg would be joining that in the front court, although he can do a lot of everything. That Dallas roster, led by Jason Kidd and Kyrie Irving, they contend.
Did you just say that Anthony Davis is going to the Hall of Fame? Are you certain of that? Klay Thompson, You have Anthony Davis in the Hall of Fame without a doubt.
Absolutely.
Without a doubt.
Absolutely.
No doubt. That's interesting.
Does he know some of the caliber of players that have made it to the Basketball Hall of Fame and how they're nowhere near what Anthony Davis has done in the NBA?
I think Tony Kornheiser doesn't realize how many All-Star games and... I know. I think that we do focus, and I'm one of them, by the way. I focus a lot on Anthony Davis and street clothes and glass. Sure. And I don't believe that he has fulfilled his total potential, but he's still an NBA champion. He's still a 10-time All-Star. Like, he's going to the Hall of Fame. There's been plenty of guys who have been less as good as he is. That's not a word. Who have been worse than him that have made the Hall of Fame. I mean, we're putting Andre Iguodala in the Hall of Fame at some point, so... You're not going to put Andre Iguodala in the Hall of Fame?
That's a borderline one. I'll give you that. That's a borderline one.
But I'm saying if he gets in the Hall of Fame, there's no question Anthony Davis is in the Hall of Fame, certainly.
I just like to take a moment and congratulate the Four Letter Network for more outstanding basketball takes.
Hey, you know
They're
what?
They're on a roll these days.
No, wait a minute.
On a roll these days over there at the Four Letter.
You can go after a couple of guys, and we have. Again, Kendrick Perkins ain't watching no basketball anymore. But... Tony Kornheiser and Michael Wilbon are pretty good at what they've done for like 60 years.
If anything, people want Wilbon back more on NBA coverage.
Yeah, man, of all the guys I'm going to rip, it ain't going to be those two. I just disagree. I'm like, yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. But I'm going to rip them, Daryl, damn.
I just like seeing them fall in line with the rest of the crew.
Wow. Rip it on Tony Kornheiser and poor Michael Wilbon. The only thing that I've never liked about Michael Wilbon, one thing, is that he calls Magic Johnson Irvin. Call him what the rest of the world calls him. It's Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
Magic.
That's got shade all over
it. No, I think that he's like, I know him personally. I call him Irvin. It's like, nah, he's Magic. Call him Magic. They didn't call it the Irvin Hour. Magic. All magic.
That's it for About Last Night.
Sensational. Well done. Well timed as well.